This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to Rain Stop Play. The Women's World Cup drew to a close this week, and to nobody's surprise, Australia won. They won every game in the tournament that they played, and they scored a mammoth 356 against England in the final, including the highest score in a World Cup final ever, with Alyssa Healy scoring 170. In part one, we're going to delve into that game, as well as covering the semi-finals and having some bigger picture discussion about what we want to see from the World Cup moving forward. In part two, Will will be joining us to discuss the goings-on in the IPL, as well as we'll be going around the grounds to round up everything else that's going on in world cricket. Today, I'm joined once again by Ellie. Ellie, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Great to hear. And we will have Will joining us later, but he can't quite make this time, so... you know, he'll miss out for now. So let's get straight into it. First of all, big picture thoughts, Ellie. The World Cup, good, bad, interesting?
It was great, to be honest. There was a lot of close games, and I think it was just a really good advertisement for women's cricket as a whole.
But as an England / New Zealand fan yourself, some disappointment, yeah?
Yeah. None of the results went my way whatsoever.
No. Nearly, though. Well, kind of nearly. I mean, we predicted this in our preview pod that we did. We knew it was, can anyone beat Australia on the day? We knew Australia would make the semi-finals. It was in that semi-final or the final, can someone beat them? And the answer was no. And considering their record over the last few years, it wasn't that surprising. Let me run you through what happened in those semi-finals then, because last week on the podcast, we spoke about the group stage. So the first semi-finals between Australia and the West Indies, the game was rain affected. And there was talk beforehand about maybe, if it's down to a T20, then, you know, West Indies have got a better chance. It wasn't anywhere near down to a T20. It was rain affected, but it was still 45 overs. And in 45 overs, Australia hit 305 for three, which at the time it was game over, more or less. You know, to opening stand of 216. It was a dominant performance, like we'd come to expect from this Australia side. Windies didn't really get close, getting all out for 148. But, you know, I think at points during the tournament, you wouldn't have expected West Indies to get to the semi-finals. I personally didn't expect them to get to the semi-finals because I think, like we said on the preview and throughout, they're a very exciting team. They can beat anyone, but they also can lose to everyone, as we saw throughout the tournament. What were your thoughts on the West Indies throughout the tournament, Ellie?
I think they're a good team, but they are really, really reliant on them opening two, Dotton and Matthews, to set the foundation. And if they don't, then what do West Indies have to defend? The only person who comes close to them in sort of run scoring in the tournament will be Stefani Taylor. And even then, she sort of struggled at number three, number four. So they were quite reliant on their main three batters throughout the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is something coming into the tournament that we said as well, that, you know, without those big three, there's no one else. You know, the other players just don't stand up to the same level. It's difficult. The bowling attack's, you know, decent enough, but if they're not going to get the scores on the board, then they're not going to be able to defend it. Brilliant for them to get to this point. And, you know, you've got to hope that with kind of Matthews being still pretty young and a couple of other young players coming through, that maybe the T20 World Cup in, I can't remember whether it's a year's time or 2 years' time now. I think it might only be a year because everything's been moved around because of COVID. So this one should have been obviously last year, either next year or the year after in South Africa. There's a T20 World Cup, so they can look forward to that. In the second semi-final, we had South Africa versus England. I think this was always thought of as going to be the closer game. we'd said previously, I think I predicted South Africa to get to the final, but then when it came to predicting the result of this game, I predicted England to get over the line. And so it was. England batted first in this one. Danny Wyatt kind of seemingly finally scoring that score that we thought she could get from opening after, you know, confidence was put in her. And her brilliant partnership with Sophia Dunkley helped England post 293. A very competitive score, but with, you know, I don't think it was a sure thing. With Laura Woolvard's form, I thought anything was chaseable, but she was the first wicket to fall. And, you know, that Shrubsole celebration, you could tell it was such a key wicket, it was such a key moment. And, you know, South Africa from there were struggling. They were 74 for four after the 20 over mark, and it got a lot worse from there because that's when the best bowler in the world, Sophie Eccleston, came into the attack. She took the final six wickets and South Africa fell 137 runs short. We will talk about England, because they, you know, made it through. But let's talk about South Africa for now. I thought they were really impressive. They were one of the favourites coming into the tournament, obviously, you know, after Australia. But very impressive. Laura Woolvard, brilliant. Marzan Kat, brilliant. And all of this without Danne van Niekerk. What were your thoughts on them throughout the tournament?
I've got like a little controversial thought. I don't know. I just don't think South Africa could have easily been like seventh. They could have lost all their games because all of them went to the final over apart from the semi. They were really reliant on Wolfart, who in the group stages was really consistent. And to a degree, Sinulu's, they were quite reliant on her batting too. And Marizanne Kat. Lizelle Lee at the top didn't fire at all, which we sort of expected her to. She was the number one ODI batter last year, won the ODI Batter of the Year award, if I'm wrong. Yeah, so really sort of big players were stepping up like Wolfart, but also a bit disappointing like Lee.
Yeah, interesting. What about their bowling attack then? Because there's a lot of talk about how good, you know, Marzan Kat and Shabnam Ismail were, and then, you know, Ayobong and Kaka coming in after them. Did you think their bowling attack kind of performed as you expected? Because, you know, and is that what got them over the line in those close games?
Definitely. You know, in the final over, I'm pretty sure more often than not they took wickets, which stopped the other teams from getting to the total. They've been really impressive with the bowling. I'm kind of surprised about Chloe Tryon because she's been bowling like the full 10 overs, which I'm guessing is because Danne van Niekerk's not there, because otherwise Chloe Tryon wouldn't be bowling the full 10. Yeah, so, and I thought she did okay stepping into that role, having to fill in for Danne van Niekerk. So, as well as the people we expect to do well, you know, Kaka, Kat, Ismail, we also saw Chloe Tryon step up and do okay.
Yeah, again, another team that we'll be targeting, you know, that home T20 World Cup for them. Woolvard, she'll have to kind of work on her strike rate a little bit to kind of go to T20 cricket, but she's a very, very talented batter, so I expect that she'll be able to do that. I do agree their bowling attack was very good, and I like the point you made about Tryon, because you can't, those are huge shoes to fill. Van Niekerk's shoes, losing her, just huge. Like, you can't fill those shoes, so like, she did a good job. South Africa were, you know, one of the better teams throughout the thing, but I like what your point about they got over the line in the close games. They did get lucky, and it seemed like through the first part of the tournament, they were getting lucky in those last overs, and England were getting very unlucky, and they were kind of losing in those last overs, or, you know, falling just short. And it felt like, for me at that point, I was thinking, oh, you know, South Africa, glad I predicted them to get to the final, because this could be all the luck's falling their way. But unfortunately, like we just said, their luck, it ran out in the semi-final. Let's talk about the final then. So there was a lot of talk about the toss afterwards, during the game, constantly, as if, because England won the toss and put Australia in. It's been widely regarded as the wrong decision. It potentially was the wrong decision, but I don't think it's as clear cut as that when you're playing a team that is on paper quite a lot better than you. It's quite hard to decide because, you know, runs on the board in a final is really important, but Australia are so good at chasing. So I wouldn't have wanted to let Australia chase down the target, because Australia chased down whatever you score. So I don't know. What did you think about the toss decision?
I mean, either way, Australia were going to win. but I think I would have liked seen us back, because I feel like Australia's weaker department was the bowling. I mean, I'm not saying in any way they were bad. They won the World Cup. They didn't lose a single game. Like, they were good. But it's their weaker side, and they lost them four bowlers early on before the World Cup started. So it's kind of a, not an inexperience, because Jess Jonathan's been around for quite some time now. But, you know, the Alana Kings, who literally debuted a few months ago. Darcy Brown, who's still quite young, she's 19. That inexperience might have been something that England could have exploited in that chase. And they kind of did with Darcy Brown. Darcy Brown was going at like 8 runs and over when England were chasing that. So it was definitely something that they could have used to their advantage if they set a toll, but they didn't. So
yeah, so let's dive into the game. So like we said, it was always going to be tough. And as I mentioned in the intro, Australia put on a mammoth total. And England did fail to chase it down. Like you said, honourable mention to Nat Siver, though, 148 not out at the end. By far the highest runs in a losing effort in a World Cup final. There wasn't much support for her, though. But I really like your point about how we did see the, you know, this, maybe the slight inexperience of the Aussie bowlers getting a bit nervous in that tight moment. I think it's something we pointed out in our preview that if there is a weakness in this Australia side, you know, it's hard to find a weakness in this amazing side. It was that some of their bowlers are just younger. They're inexperienced compared to some of the other teams and, you know, compared to how solid their whole batting lineup is, basically, that the few of their bowlers have played a few less games. They're still amazing bowlers, but it's a very small weakness. So what were your thoughts on England in general then? Did this final, apart from the kind of, did this final go wrong for them, or was it just that Australia are too good?
I think it is just the Australia are too good, because the batters did a good job, you know. No one stuck around really with Nat Siver, but, you know, Tammy Beaumont got going, Heavy Knight got going, Amy Jones got going, Steve Duncan got going. But Australia are just too good. They stopped them before they could really fire. So it's a mix of both, really.
Yeah, I think that was the thing, though, is that England, other than Nat Siver, no one really, everyone, we had a few players like Heather Knight, Tammy Beaumont, they all kind of got to 20 and then couldn't kind of push on. Whereas the Australian players, you know, even though obviously Healy was the standout knock, but Haynes and Mooney both got kind of like 60, just more of a contribution there. And yeah, they're just so good. Australia are just so good. You've got to hand it to them. They're a very good cricket side. And England are also very good. But it's important to remember Australian women's cricket has been professional for 8 years now. England, it's only 2 years, I think. So, and that's kind of expanded with the 100 last year. So, you know, we're a few years behind, and then, you know, the rest of the world's kind of years behind us as well in that way, which is, you know, why it wasn't too surprising to see these two as the finalists. In general, who was it who stood out for you in the tournament, other than the kind of the players we've already mentioned?
I want to say Alana King. She was quite high up in the wickets. It's her first World Cup. She's been thrown in at, you know, she was thrown into the Ashes. She was thrown into the World Cup. So in as a whole, she's just done really well. In this World Cup, definitely. She was beating some world-class players.
Yeah, completely agree. I thought Alana King was really impressive, and it's easy to forget that she is so new to international cricket. You know, before the Ashes, there was lots of talk about whether her or Amanda Jade Wellington would be the spinner for the Ashes, and they went with Alana King, and you know, they went with Alana King for the majority of this tournament as well. Speaking of Amanda Jade Wellington, you picked her out as your potential breakout star before the tournament. I'm a huge fan of hers as well. How did her tournament go? I know she didn't play too much, but how would you rate her performance overall?
I think she got like a game. Was it just the one game she got? But I think it was good. She took 2 wickets or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember her taking 2 wickets, and I think it was against England, actually. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was against England, and I thought, that was quite good. You know, she hadn't really had much game time before. She wasn't in the Ashes. Though she did have that A-series tour that was going on as the Ashes was, she didn't really have much game time. So for her to come out midway through a World Cup and then take two wickets and then never play again, unfortunately, I still thought she did really well.
Yeah. I back that. I thought she was pretty good in that one game she played. So on kind of best players, I said about who stood out for you. Let's do our rain stop play player of the tournament. I want to hear your thoughts. Obviously there's the obvious examples. We could easily say Sophie Eccleston, which is I think probably who we'll end up agreeing on. But let's throw some other names out to start with. Alyssa Healy didn't seem to do anything until the semi-finals and then just, you know, rocked up and scored 300 runs in two games. So, you know, that's very good. Not very good throughout the rest of the tournament. I was talking on last week's pod about how my predictions for Meg Lanning to be top run scorer, it was still going to come through. She was going to be the big game player. But the opening partnerships were just too good. So Healy kind of stole the limelight. She was actually officially the player of the tournament, although I'm not sure she should be. Well, I want to hear your thoughts on this.
She did well all tournament. You know, she was getting all right scores. But it's those last two games that she came into. Compared to Rachel Haynes, for example, she was lurking around that leading run scorer sort of area for quite some time. And I think, and then she got leapfrogged by Alyssa Healy in the last two games. So she got that leading run scorer title robbed off of her by Alyssa Healy, who I don't really think she deserved the player of the tournament. I think that probably could have gone to someone more consistent like a Wolfart, who was every game just getting those 50 plus scores. It felt like she didn't get 100, but I mean the consistency that she had, I don't think she needed 100. So it could have gone to someone like Wolfart.
Yeah, I mean before the tournament we spoke about her as a kind of breakout star. It was maybe a little bit cheeky me calling her my breakout star because we already knew she was really good. So, you know, I got away with one there. Still young, though, you know, so I feel like that's okay. But, yeah, I think Wolfart was on for it. If she'd have scored some runs in the semi-final. Also, I feel like with those things, it's easier. There's so much recency bias. Healy has just scored runs. She's there. They basically always give it to someone who's in the final, don't they? Because they're there. The other people aren't there, so they want to be able to give it to someone. And then they also want to be able to give it to someone who's won and who's performed on that day. Because personally for me, Sophie Eccleston, 21 wickets at 15, economy of under 4, that's player of the tournament for me. But they never give it to bowlers. They never give it to bowlers. And, you know, Marzan Kapp as well, very good. 200 runs, 12 wickets. It's a very good all-round performance. Personally, I vote Sophie Eccleston. What do you think?
I feel like it would be a bit wrong if I'd try to, like, vote Sophie Devine when she's not even, like, the top 10 run scorers. But, yeah, I'm going to have to agree. Sophie Eccleston.
Sophie Eccleston.
Got to keep that ballers. You know, they never get it, so like you say, so...
Yeah, let's start a trend. We'll do it. We'll start a trend here. So that's it. Our official rain stop play player of the World Cup 2022, Sophie Eccleston. Well done. She's welcome to collect her award. We haven't decided on what the award is yet, but you know, well done, Sophie Eccleston. You were brilliant. You are brilliant. What do you think is kind of what can this World Cup do, Ellie, to grow? What should it do to kind of? I think it was very high quality. A lot of the cricket was, and the other than Australia, the next and you know Pakistan and Bangladesh on the other end. Although Pakistan and Bangladesh had some close games with other teams, all those other teams, those five teams, they're pretty evenly matched. What can this tournament do to kind of go to the next level? Do you think they need more teams? Because you know we spoke in the preview about. We'd love to be talking about Thailand being here. Do you think 10 teams is the natural next step?
I'd like to see more teams, you know, the Ireland, the Netherlands, the Thailands, they coming through. And I would like to see that, but I think it's kind of unrealistic. This tournament was a month and it was 7 games if you didn't get through at the semis, 8 if you got to the semis and didn't get through at the finals, 9 if you did all. I can't really imagine how tiring that must be because it was crammed into a month. So... while I'd like to see more teams playing 9 games in a group stage alone, on the players, I don't think that would be great for them. But I would like to see it.
Yeah, I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, it's difficult because you want more teams naturally to have more competition, but then you don't want to, like you say, it's tiring. It was a lot of games in a short space of time. I kind of couldn't believe it when we looked at it for our preview pod that they were going to fit this all in a month. I couldn't believe how quickly it was over because they just seemed to just bash out the games. And yeah, because it was very competitive. And if you add in more teams, it's not going to be as competitive. But it's difficult. It is a difficult one. I think it's a very good structure. I like the kind of everyone plays everyone thing. I think it works for a 50-over World Cup. Yeah, I think, you know, a next stage for women's cricket now, this year is probably another big year. We've been speaking off air before that there's the Fairbreaks Women's Tournament coming up in May, which we're going to try and do some coverage of. Yeah, so this year's another big one for women's cricket. In just under a month's time, we've got the inaugural Fairbreak Dubai Women's Invitational Tournament, which is going to be a tournament which has players from about a million different nations playing. I think I've seen like the captain of Vanuatu is going to be there. Everyone's favourite Brazilian cricketer is going to be there. Lots of New Zealand players. Is this something you're excited about, Ellie? I know it's something you've been covering a little bit on your Twitter, but I think it's not been covered that much so far.
Yeah, the way they've gone about advertising is they've just dropped the players' signings and then, like, that's it. But I think the tournament as a concept, you know, getting those big players from New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, and pairing them up with people from, I saw one from Austria, you know, I don't know why that's the only one that's coming to my head right now. But any country you can think of that's not a full member, I think it's great that they get to play with the big players because I think it improves their game. And I think they're making it quite accessible to people from those different countries too. So it's to a wider audience and they're getting these people from their countries too. Because we don't really get that in cricket, apart from like top 8-10 teams. If you're from Poland, you're never going to see your team on the big screen. So I think this competition's doing that and it's great to see. Good for Associate Nations, which is what we like, because we want to close that sort of massive gap that's there. We can't pretend it's not there. It closes that gap up and really makes the game a lot more accessible for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it's the... I'm not sure if this is correct, but it feels like it's the first kind of women's franchise tournament where it's not going to be, you know, vast majority home nation players, because it's not going to be vast majority kind of UAE players. It's going to be players, like we said, from all over the world. And it's going to be really exciting. First 2 weeks of May, that's going to be on. And yeah, hopefully we'll be doing some coverage of that. We've also obviously got the 100 coming up later in the year. Women's 100 will be really exciting. And, you know,
this is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Women's English season starts. It's coming around the corner quickly. That Charlotte Edwards Cup will be with us before we know it. That about wraps us up for part one. In part two, Will will be joining us to talk about the IPL, and then we will go around the grounds. Welcome back to part two of Rain Stop Play. I'm now joined by Will. Will, how are you?
Hello, very well.
And we're going to talk about the IPL now, Will. What have you been thinking about it so far? General thoughts?
General thoughts. First of all, very happy that it's on. And I'm enjoying having loads of cricket to watch. There are noticeably more teams than last year. Like, I wasn't expecting it to make a difference, but it has been noticeable that you get a lot more days between each team playing. So it feels like it's been on for a while now, but I've only been able to see two Rajasthan games, which usually I would say is a blessing. But Zach, we're doing well. I'm not angry, which is a huge change for us doing an IPL pod.
Yeah, the first thing I've put down in our notes is, are Rajasthan good? And are they good, Will? Do you think they're going to be... I think they do slyly have a decent-ish side. We didn't really, with our preview pod with Ben Jones, which is still available if you want to listen to that, where we kind of got a bit too focused on kits, and I don't even think we ended up mentioning Rajasthan, which was a first for an IPL pod with us. But yeah,
doesn't matter.
Maybe they're good.
Kit Viz was my favourite bit of that pod. That was he's passionate about kits, and I respect that. And he didn't even make the point, which I often do, that Rajasthan's one has this sort of back and forth where sort of every time they get in legal trouble, they get brought back as fully pink, and then over the years it becomes bluer and bluer, as it has this year, which really annoys me. Commit to the full pink, please.
Yeah, commit to the full pink. And speaking of another team that we've spoken about a lot on the pod, and they also have quite a nice kit, KKR. Are they good?
No.
Maybe? No. I don't think so either. No. But, you know, Dre Ross is doing what Dre Ross does. Sunil Narine's good. And Umesh Yadav taking wickets? Is he really good? Or is it just that the pitchers are doing something?
Two things on this. Number one, I'm quite smug because at every auction we've ever covered, I keep saying, why is nobody picking up Umesh Yadav? He's right there, and you're spending way more money on overseas bowlers who are not as good as him. So that's nice. He's top wicket taker, I think, as we say this, or he has been. The problem is, KKR, and I think we should take a minute to be amused that CricBiz expert Ben Jones said KKR are clearly the worst team in the tournament, and they currently sit second in the table. Enjoying that. But no, I think, are they good? Like all IPL teams, both of them have talent. The problem is they've got the same issue, which is both heavily, heavily reliant on a couple of batters going berserk. So yes, if Dre Russ does Dre Russ things, you will win a game. But we've always known that. That's always been true with KKR. If he doesn't do that, do they have the depth to back him up? I think probably still no. Rajasthan are in the same situation as last year. If Sanju Sampson and Joss Butler don't nick off immediately and face a good number of balls, they will get their iron and up the strike rate towards the end of their innings and score lots of runs, and that'll be great, and you'll probably win some games. If that doesn't happen, you'll lose more often than not, and I think that's still the situation. There still isn't enough batting depth to come after those two. And from a bowling perspective, there was always going to be a massive Jofra Archer-shaped hole in that team. Regardless of what they did at the auction, it was very hard to cover that, losing him. And they haven't. And what they've sort of tried to do is just not bother. It's the kind of Moneyball thing of, like, we can't replace Jofra Archer, but can we replace him in the aggregate by getting lots of different pieces? And so far, yes, the two spinners have done really, really well. And I'm absolutely buzzing that we have actual spinners. I don't just have to watch Riyan Parag almost underarm the ball every over. Yuzi Chahal has done particularly well. Ashwin chimed in as well. But there's still a lack of pace in that attack. So I don't think there'll be a real contender this season. Winning two from the first two is a great start, which gives them a chance of sneaking their way into the top four. But I don't see them as a serious contender. But I'm enjoying it while it lasts. Don't get me wrong. Top of the league.
Yeah, top of the league. You don't get to say that much in anything you support these days, Will. So enjoy it. Enjoy it.
I haven't said it in about 10 years.
Yeah. Wow. I like that we've managed to do Moneyball, talk about how some experts say things wrong. You know, good stuff with the IPL chat. You've written in the notes here about Raj Bauer, and I did want to talk about this because this was just sad. Because he played one game, big fan of him. I was bigging him up in the preview. I've been bigging him up for months because of, you know, under-19 World Cup stuff. And, you know, dropped after a first baller. Sad, harsh, but, you know, they weren't doing well. The Punjab Kings, you know, they're good fun. They seem to just want to hit. They want to play T10 cricket, don't they, the Punjab Kings? They just want to go a million miles an hour. And they're good fun to watch, and You've noted something down here about what Ben Jones said about their strategy and how it's fun. Their bowling's not very good, but they're going to try and just hit sixes after sixes. And, you know, they could win the whole thing with that. They probably won't, though.
Yeah, I'd echo that completely. They are my favourite team on a purely vibes level. Are they good? Probably not massively. Livingston in particular looked like he kind of got found out, essentially bowl wide to him, and he's not going to go off. And then I forget whoever they've played in the most recent game, but the bowlers decided to not do that and bowl really straight to him, and he pumped them for 108.6 meters, which is hard to get your head around. If he keeps doing that, great for them. They are ridiculous. Like, you can't have a team that all plays that way. But I like that they have. And yeah, Ben Jones' tweet on this was very interesting, where he basically said, the lack of relegation in this league means there's only one thing to play for, which is winning, which you would expect to give you a pretty homogenous style of play that all teams are kind of trying to create the same thing. And yet, for some reason, the Punjab Kings have just thrown out that template and decided, if we have this complete chaos thing, which is going to fall apart in 30% of the games, but will win us outright a number, however defined, then they might. They're almost definitely not going to win, but they will win as many as they lose by doing that. And it is the most exciting team. When you have Shah Rukh Khan, you have Raj Bauer, you have Liam Livingston, that's your whole middle order is some of my favourite players in the world. It's hard not to love them. And, yeah, as I said in the notes, if they somehow sneak into the top four, they're one of those teams that you fancy a cheeky bet on to go and nick a game in the semi-final. Because at that point, anyone can win. If you turn up with two good performances, you've won the damn thing.
Is this an early Wheels Outside shout? Is this what we're hearing here? It's early. It's too early. Well, you don't have.
It's too early. No, I do. I do have an early outside shout. If you want one, if you want to go on to another of my favorite teams.
Go on, please.
Gujarat Titans.
The bowling attack is very good, and the fact that Hardik is bowling is fun. My issue with that team is Hardik batting at four. It's very strange.
I love it so much.
I don't know
that he's ever done it in his career, but they're like, you're the captain now. Bat at four.
You've got to bat at four. And no, you can't just hit six after six. You've got to go at 120 or whatever he's been going at.
But you know what was weird? He's quite good at that. It reminds me of the time he randomly played two test matches and we've never seen him again. But he sort of can do it, which is unexpected.
He can. He can do it, yes. But lots of players can do that, whereas there's not as many players who can do what Hardik can do in the last five overs. So bat him a little bit lower. Give him just whenever a wicket goes down from the 12th over onwards, play Hardik. Bring Hardik in, or maybe slightly later, depending on how it works. Just, you know, come on. He's got to bat a little bit lower. I think they do seem to be short on batting. Other than that. But the bowling attack with Ellie's favourite, Lockie Ferguson, Shami, you know, Rashid Khan, great stuff, isn't it? Shubman Gill is one right. player who actually had an unbelievable innings. I think it was yesterday. No, Saturday. Saturday. Got to be Saturday. Didn't watch much of it yesterday. But Saturday, he scored lots of runs, looked really good. And as soon as the commentator said, oh, he's on for a century here, he gets out next ball, obviously, in the most classic case. The other new team, Lucknow Super Giants, currently playing Sunrisers. That will be completely outdated by the time you listen to this. But they've been, in their kind of first games, they really seem like the type of team I have to support in any sport, because they bottled their first game. And that's what teams I support in any sport do. So I felt really more affinity with them immediately. And then they did, you know, go and chase down 210. It wasn't comfortable, but just Evan Lewis was having a good time. 55 not out for 23. Absolutely bashing it around. Quinton de Kock and Kale Rahul have been all right. But other than that, I think my Lucknow boys aren't very good, basically.
I could be wrong, because as we said before hitting record, there are so many games that I get confused. I don't think I've seen Lucknow play yet, I'll be honest. So I'm jury's out on them.
Kit's lovely. Krunal Pandya's having some good fun without his brother. I think he's all right.
You know, we love a stupid football analogy on this podcast.
Absolutely, please.
Kunal Pandya is Jesse Lingard.
Yes. I love that. So he's going to have an unbelievable season this year then, by that metric, because obviously Mumbai are Man United.
Yeah,
not really.
Just about works.
Weak, it's loose. But West Ham last year, Lucknow Supergiants. So Lucknow will get making playoffs then, that was what you're saying.
Yeah, that is what I'm saying. In fact, I have a really, really rogue prediction for you at the end of this for top four.
I mean, let's go.
Do you want
let's
it now?
Go for it now.
You want it now?
Yeah, go on.
So you and Ben Jones, I think, said the same thing, right? You both said RCB Chennai, Lucknow. Who was your fourth?
Mumbai.
See, I think Mumbai have got a bottle job in them.
I now think so too.
And I think Chennai are out of it.
As we said in our messages over the weekend, where we think that Mumbai have got a kind of a Pandya, both Pandya brothers shaped hole in that team that doesn't seem to be quite being fulfilled. They are seemingly reliant on, I mean, Pollard could bowl well, but I don't think you can rely on four overs from Pollard. And they are. They could bowl a bit of David, but again, I wouldn't want to particularly rely on that. His batting hasn't kind of been as up to the standard that we expect, but he's very new to the IPL, completely fair enough. He's not a Hardik replacement. Hardik has grown up playing in India, so fair enough.
This was always going to be the problem with the Tim David is our entire middle order approach that they took to the auction. Like, he's not. Yeah. That doesn't work. Okay, do you want a top four? I think the wheels have come off Chennai. They're not making it. I don't have any love for RCB at this point. Mumbai might sneak it, but for controversy's sake, I'm not going to go with them. I think both of the new teams are getting there. I think Gujarat and Lucknow both get in there. Delhi, I still like. And I'm going to back my boys for fourth. Butler will power Rajasthan into the top four. Let's go.
Wow, I love this. Let's snip this. This is so basically, Elliot, you probably don't know, but Will, I think it was a couple IPLs ago, randomly predicted Sunrisers to just kind of come back and do it. And they were, at the time, they were seventh. Everyone was like, what are you talking about? Mental prediction. And they got to the final. Am I right in thinking they got to the final? Or at least they made the playoffs. And it was just, it got week by week, it got a better shout and a better shout. And then it fell, you know, agonizingly short. But yeah. Will, thank you very much. Go on.
They had, at that point, the best opening pair in the IPL by far. Which reminds me, the two members of that pair, David Warner has just rocked up in Delhi, which is a massive boost for them because I don't love the look of their top three at the moment. So if they integrate him in, that's why I think they might make top four. Punjab Kings have not played Johnny Bairstow yet. If they work out a way to fit him in with the overseas cap into their 11... that slightly makes that 11 make more sense in my head. And then he can face a few more balls at the top. That lets your crazy middle order guys just do their bits without so much pressure. So that's their route into the four.
So I think the reason was that they had Rajapaksa, who went really, really well in the first couple games. So it was kind of like Johnny Bairstow's back, but this guy's been absolutely smashing it. He did get run out nine from five balls. I think it would still be unfair to drop him after that, but you could see it happen because it's Johnny Bairstow, isn't it? So, you know, he's very good at cricket.
I feel very sorry for Johnny Bairstow because for whatever reason, he feels like an easy person to leave out in any format that he plays. And I'm not quite sure why that is, because he is legitimately one of the best opening bats in the IPL I've ever seen. He's the best English player in the IPL ever, by far, based on his performances. And so he'll work his way into that 11, undoubtedly.
I don't see him opening, though. I can see him batting at four because he's obviously been batting at four for England, and because you're not going to bat Dhawan or Agarwal anywhere other than opening, are you? I think the Dhawan thing is weird.
I don't know if he'll make the season. I think Shikhar might be out of the team before too long. He's on his last legs. He's like 37 now. He's way older than I think he is.
I know, because it was a quiz question that I did about who got the most runs in, like it was like the 2004 under 19 World Cup, and it was Dhawan was playing then. But yeah, that will That'll do for IPL chat for this week. Now we're going to go around the grounds. There's been lots of cricket going on. Ellie, you've been keeping up to date with Netherlands versus New Zealand. Do you want to tell us about that one?
Yep, so it's been a quite fun series because some of the players for the Netherlands play domestically for some New Zealand teams. So like Max O'Dowd, he plays for Auckland Air. Logan van Beek, actually born in New Zealand, plays for the Netherlands. He was playing against them. Some of the New Zealand team are his roommates, so former roommates. So that's quite fun. It was pretty much like straight up like New Zealand domination. Netherlands were never really going to win this one anyway, but they were pretty much smashed by Will Young for the entire series.
Nice. Yeah, and it was so it's the first time they've played each other in a bilateral series outside of a World Cup, so that's pretty big. And you know, that's thankful to the World Cup Super League that I'm a big fan of, means they all play each other. And again, we spoke before about the women's game, you know, breaching the gap between associate nations and kind of the bigger teams, and the World Cup Super League has been doing that to a certain extent in the men's game as well. It was Ross Taylor's last game overnight. Well done on a brilliant career, Ross Taylor. Great player, great bloke. I think he's got to be up there with, I mean, he says about any New Zealand player. I think every single player in New Zealand teams ever is always kind of one of those blokes you're like, or one of those people you're always like, they're one of the nicest people in the sport, aren't they? Because New Zealanders, they're just quite nice, aren't they? So moving onwards, we've also had Pakistan, Australia still going on. Who knew? I know a lot of their players have left to go to play in the IPL. So it is a slightly weakened Australia side. 3-match ODI series. There is one T20 it will be the day you're listening to this, will be happening probably as you're listening to this maybe. And the Pakistan won the 3 ODI series 2-1, coming back from 1-0 down. Travis Head scored a 72-ball 100 in the first ODI. Apparently it's his like 40th ODI, which I don't believe. This was his debut. As far as I'm concerned, this was his debut. When has he played all these ODIs? I'm sorry. Australia don't play white ball cricket. Haven't done for the last 2 years. When has he played all these ODIs? It must have been years ago, because he wasn't in the squad in the 2019 World Cup. This just absolutely baffled me. I saw him in there and I was like, oh yeah, that's quite a good player. He plays some shots. He can go at a runner ball. He'll be good in this. Wonder why he hasn't played before. And then they came up with his stats and he's 45 ODIs. Couldn't believe it. But yeah, he's been pretty good throughout. Ben McDermott, again, probably making his debut. Surely has to be making his ODI debut in this series. He got 100 in the second game. Pakistan chased down 348, which was insane. Babar Azam and Imanul Haq both getting centuries. And then they both scored loads of runs in the second game as well, as when Australia bowled out for 210. But yeah, that test series was a little bit disappointing. The ODI series seemed like it was going to be a bit more exciting, but unfortunately I didn't actually get to watch much other than the first one. But yeah, other than that, county season.
He's played 6 games, by the way, Ben McDermott, ODIs.
6 games, 6 ODIs, blimey. When have they played these ODIs? He was like a breakout star of this year's BBL that happened. When have they... I don't know. You can't keep up with Australia. But yeah, other than that, the county season this Thursday. Very exciting. Will, you excited for the county championship? Know you're a big fan.
No, but only because I can't believe it's starting already. I've got so confused by dates and there is a lot of cricket. And it's like 4 degrees in England at the moment, so it doesn't feel like cricket season. But yeah, I'm excited. Why not?
It is the same every year, though. We have some really nice weather in March, and then just for when the county season runs around. I saw over the weekend there was a game that was a snow-stopped play in a pre-season game that was like, this is it. This is English cricket at its best. This is why we produce the best test players in the world. So that just leaves us with my quick question for the week. The answer to last week's question, who is the most recent England men's test captain who we don't see do regular media appearances, which is a bit of a flowery one. is Alex Stewart, who is the director of cricket at Surrey, because the rest of them we see on the TV all the bloody time. And then this week's question...
I'd forgotten last week's question until you just said that, and now I'm remembering. This is such an ambiguous postmodern approach to a quiz, Zach. I love it. No concrete answer, just doesn't do much media.
Well, the reasoning behind it, as I explained on last week's pod, was that you can't say cricket commentator who is commentating in cricket, because Flintoff doesn't do cricket commentary, but he's in the media more than anyone else is. He's more famous than anyone else is. Whereas, you know, Athers, Hussain, Vaughan, they're all doing commentary all the time. You know, even if Vaughan we don't like, he's still doing commentary. He was back in the BT Sports studio, you know, a couple of weeks ago.
No, you're absolutely right. I see the logic. No,
yeah, and Stuart doesn't. Stuart doesn't do anything because, you know, he's busy at Surrey coaching. So, yeah. And this week's question, how many days did the longest test match in history last for? And it's on absurd. That lovely...
It's snowing again on Saturday, you know.
Is it actually?
Yeah. So we'll get some more snow, stop play.
Yes, I can't wait. And on those rather snowy, cheery notes, I think that about wraps us up. Thank you for joining us, Ellie, and thank you, Will, and we'll see you all next week.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.